Our Asia correspondent is Ed White. Lovely to have you back with us. Financial Times he's with, based in Seoul. Now, the China-Taiwan tensions renewed. We had the most recent incident following the visit of Nancy Pelosi and some of the demonstrations that followed. What's the latest, Ed?
Yeah, good morning, Catherine. So just 2 weeks after that visit from Nancy Pelosi and what became the most serious confrontation over Taiwan in almost two decades, China has been continuing this week to send fighter jets and warships close to Taiwan. As of earlier this week, there were around 22 PLA aircraft and six warships operating in the Taiwan Strait area. According to the Taiwanese defense officials, around half of these fighter jets were actually operating on Taiwan's side of the medium line, which is this unofficial buffer traditionally separating the armed forces of Taiwan and China. This continued military escalation by the People's Liberation Army coincided with a visit of a new delegation of U.S. lawmakers to Taiwan. And of course, these ongoing activities, and specifically the fact that we're seeing China now operate regularly on both sides of Taiwan's sort of eastern and western coastlines and moving in and out of Taiwan's sort of territorial zone. This all really confirms what many people were worried about, that China's reaction to the Pelosi visit would not be a one-off set of drills or exercises, but in fact that escalation would turn or morph into a sustained campaign which could last for weeks or perhaps even months. Now, in terms of a response, the US and Taiwanese officials have, of course, continued to condemn this new phase of military escalation. But there does appear to be a move by the US to show resolve, at least now hold the line with China. And that is something we're likely to see more of in the coming weeks. So this means more diplomatic or economic support for Taiwan. And to that end, just yesterday, the Biden administration announced it would start a new phase of formal trade and investment talks with Taipei, the aim of obviously deepening economic engagement between the two countries. And over the weekend, the coming weekend, we have a group from of MPs from Japan on their way to Taiwan to show support. I imagine the US will potentially be pushing other allies, probably including New Zealand, to do the same. So lots more to come on this. It certainly hasn't ended just because of the policy that it did.
Well, it's not just the politics. It's what business is doing as well. Of course, there's a huge economic and trade component to this situation, and what sort of planning are we seeing from some international companies?
Yes, that's right. So many major international companies are basically starting to draw up new contingency plans for a US-China military conflict, and this is a signal that investors in China, and we're talking about some of the world's biggest companies, they no longer consider the idea of an invasion of Taiwan to be merely a low probability or a black swan risk, a long tail event, something that's unlikely to happen. This is something that is now considered a real threat. And so the idea that you can just pull out completely of China, that is very much easier said than done. And so even before tensions soared around Taiwan, many of these multinational companies were worried about increased reputational risk. They were worried about pressure from Washington and other allies to diversify away from the Chinese market. And so this intensified planning that we're now seeing from business leaders, and this is in the US, Europe, Japan, and elsewhere, this is looking at basically two different things. You've got manufacturers with global supply chains. For them, the Taiwan crisis added what is already seen as the material impacts of weak US-China ties, the trade war between the two biggest, world's two most powerful countries. And this is making them really compelling them to look more seriously at whether or not they build factories in other countries, mostly likely in Southeast Asia. It might not mean leaving China altogether, but it's at least directing investments, new investments into other places. But then you've got companies that are far more exposed to the Chinese consumer market itself. For instance, the likes of Fonterra in New Zealand. And for them, replacing the world's biggest consumer market is just not that easy. And so this will obviously add heat to those discussions around the need to diversify. And the background of all of this is you've also got in China Xi Jinping's zero COVID policy, which is making business much harder to do. You've got the crackdowns in Xinjiang and Hong Kong. And so I think you're going to see around the world, really, a lot of businesses recalculating that reputational risk around what to do in China.
Yes, it is in a different place, isn't it, in the COVID situation, China, both with the zero COVID policy continuing, but while now you've got another country's, you've got central banks busy trying to cut inflation by hiking interest rates. You've got the reverse in China. You've got it cutting rates in order to try and stimulate the economy further. But I understand there's also pressures on its economy with respect to drought.
Yes, that's right. So markets did have a bit of a surprise this week when the People's Bank of China reduced its, one of its key lending rates. This was seen as a response by the central bankers to basically the mounting challenges facing the Chinese economy. The key two things there are the zero COVID policy that I've mentioned, but also the fallout from sort of cash-strapped property developers and slowing global growth. But even more than that, at the moment, an immediate problem is coming, and this is probably a developing story over the coming days and weeks, but China's southwest is facing a real problem with droughts and heat waves. At the heart of what's going on is a crisis basically around the Yangtze River, China's longest waterway, its most important river. Water levels there have hit their lowest point for this time of year on record. This stems from rainfall around the river basin at about 40% lower than normal for this time of the year, and similar to what happens in a dry year in New Zealand when the water levels on key lakes and rivers are low. Basically, the region's hydro dams are becoming unable to generate the required amount of power. And so for the region of Sichuan, which is a province of more than 80 million people, home also to huge globally important industries, the authorities have had to start in the last few days rationing power. And you're going to start to see, I think, similar moves being made in neighbouring Chongqing. This has meant disrupted power supplies already to factories, the likes of Apple supplier Foxconn, Toyota, large lithium mining operations, which ultimately supply EV companies like Tesla. And so these water shortages are also prompting the officials in Beijing to start ramping up coal power use. So you've obviously got this conflict there around China's carbon aims and economic development. And I think things are starting to get even more desperate. We're starting to see officials in some areas fire metal canisters into the air. This is an effort to seed clouds, ultimately induce rainfall. And then the other factor is obviously the people, the populations who are enduring a heat wave at the same time. A lot of concern that as this goes on, disrupted power supplies will affect the use of air conditioners, and so obviously a real problem for the government.
It really is. Just very, very quickly, I know in India, in New Delhi specifically, there's efforts to try and cut how much people are buying booze, and they're trying to unwind alcohol liberalisation rules. However, in Japan, it's all about trying to increase economic growth by, you know, buy more sake. Is that the thing?
Yep, that's right. So Delhi, very quickly, the Indian capital has been basically reversing its liberalisation rules for liquor licensing. That is meaning that many people in the city are unable to buy booze. And in Japan, the government's so worried about slowing growth, and they're looking for new ideas to how to tempt younger people to drink more. So starting an official campaign linked to the tax agency there called Sake Viva. So starting a contest which calls for younger people to come up with a new way to boost the alcohol industry.
Yikes, I presume there's a big alcohol tax there that they're looking to benefit from. Thanks, Ed.